Welcome to Modcast, a civilization podcast focused on modding.
Kenneth Borland.
Tony Keel.
Joe Nacha.
And Bo DeSnitis.
Yeah, Ken, you actually woke me up today. I was laying in bed with my newborn baby against me, dreaming about spaceships and stuff, with my baby flying through space. I completely forgot that we had pushed the date back, so I slept in. So it was my fault this time. It was my fault we were late today.
So how old is your newest rugrat now? Isn't it about getting on to be near 2 months?
No, near to 1 month, because my rugrat was born on the 4th of July.
Ah, yes.
So, she's sleeping right now. She's drinking some milk, too. So, you know, sleeping and drinking at the same time.
Hmm.
I think that's something only John could do.
Speaking of John.
Which, by the way, yeah, John is going through a harsh Australian winter right now. And I know that doesn't make any sense, but you gotta remember it's on the bottom of the planet, so it's cold right
now. Everything is backwards. And hamburgers eat people there.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, and the dingoes eat the babies.
Don't you mean babies eat the dingoes?
And they don't have sexual warming?
So, John, until a later date or forever, I don't know, is taking a break from the modcast. So, I think we should all give John an honorary crikey. So, crikey!
Crikey!
Water.
Right.
Come on, Water, give an honorary crikey.
Crikey?
Yeah, there you go. Peter's got to be way better.
Crikey!
All right, that's good. Welcome to Modcast episode 37. Today, we are joined with Kenneth Impaler WRG Ferland.
Final Thumbs, engage!
Wouter Lacutus Snyders.
On my brand new PC, woohoo!
Yay! And with 100% less John, with 100% more Peter Maniac Steenbicke.
Good day, everyone.
Now, Peter is going to be hanging out with us as long as we can trick him into coming on the show. Once he figures out our plot, you know, he'll probably go and run and never be found again.
He already knows that the cake was a lie. What else will he discover next?
Or if John Archer kicks me out again?
Yes, exactly. Both of you are right. So, I was thinking I should change my forum name to Garrett Sisnisnet.
And that would mean what?
So, what now?
I don't know. Garrett Sisnisnet. Garrett Sisnisnet.
Are you trying to sound more European?
It was German, I think.
Yes, I'm trying to get my act. Garrett Sisnisnet
or something.
Snick.
Snitchnack.
Nee. Alright, that didn't make any sense at all. Alright.
Today in a news corner, we discuss the Bossimod's release on Cyphonetics, and Phyrexus Game has released two news items, how to become a game programmer and how to become a video game artist, and they say you need to get an education.
Today in the Artist Sketchpad, we get a sneak peek at the Sandworm and the Dune mod, a unit by Deliverator.
Today in the Code Corner, we're going to look at the Era Styles mod by Thulish, and the multiple production mod by Devon.
Here's what's been making the news in the Sith community.
For once in the modcast, we actually have some newsworthy crap. In the news today, we have a little gift from Firaxis, and the art director Seth Spalding talks about building a portfolio that will land you a job making game art. So he basically does this whole thing giving you some tips on how artists get into game companies. Has anyone read this all the way?
Yeah, but I already forgot it.
I thought you read it, Tony. You're the artist.
Yeah, but I have no chance of ever getting hired to Firaxis, so...
Well, with an attitude like that, you don't.
you know, I don't think Firaxis has a podcast yet, so.
They do, actually.
It's us.
Only it kind of died. But
oh, that's too bad. I never even heard of it, so. Dead before I knew it.
So you have erotic furries on your portfolio, Tony? Is that why you're never going to make it in?
You know, I read that, and I said, this is a great little article to read, because he's just at the very end making sure you're paying attention. Number one epic portfolio fail. Two words. Erotic furries. Yeah, I don't think the naked pictures are for getting this kind of job.
Would this be the right time to make a joke about Kenneth's name?
Yes.
Anytime is the right time for that.
Okay.
Kenneth Furries Land? Kenneth Furry?
I'm glad I got that out on the first episode.
You did good. You did good. We all did good. So, some of the things he says in here is to show both high and low poly models, you know, to show that you can do detailed stuff and you can do zoomed out stuff.
Yeah, the latter is something not many people can do, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a few people out there that can, but, you know.
More stiff mobs make detailed stuff that shows down the computer and stuff like that.
Yeah, you want to be as effective with the polys you use as possible. So, it's okay to make something low poly, but it should look good for a low poly thing.
Yeah.
If you make it high poly, it should look freaking fantastic.
Also, he says, go to school.
No way.
get a bachelor, get it done with. So,
I've also heard, this is I think somewhere else, that you want to try to include just your best work in your portfolio.
Yeah.
Try to hit them with quality and not quantity. Don't. So do just throw away all your old crap and just do the very best few things you can do.
Yeah,
only that. They don't want to see your media.
He says not to include your high school stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty serious about it. I mean, if someone's dedicated right now to doing this, you know, he recommends you go to school first off, finish your education. That'll really make you a lot more attractive.
Erotic furry lovers.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Well, like, your art director will be very attracted to you.
Don't you want to go through the other top 10, you know, epic fail?
All right, we got applicant used LOL and the smiley face in their cover letter. Not smart.
Number 9. Applicant's picture is displayed larger and more prominently than any artwork on their site.
Hey, isn't self-confidence a good sign?
you got it, I'll do it.
Janitor?
Yeah.
Oh, the janitor slot is already taken in practice. Very nice guy, just janitor. So, nope. No reply, no openings there.
Let's see.
Okay, number 7. Applicant sends tiny, heavily compressed AVIs of models on turntables. The files also have staggeringly long load times.
It sounds like something they actually must have went through with.
And number 6, the bulk of the applicant's 3-page cover letter is devoted to describing their cool, sick, groundbreaking game idea.
Yeah,
you draw your storyboard and crayons and hand it here on your freaking application.
Okay, we already kind of mentioned number 5 here. Applicant shows every single student project from art school and a few from high school.
Oh, this one's great. When called, the applicant's recorded message almost explicitly states that there's a good chance they're currently stoned and therefore unable to answer. Oh, yeah, Wouter, you know, I heard you deep into the reefer a little bit yourself.
Uh-huh. You're mistaking me for every American tourist here.
Oh, for God, you live right next to Amsterdam. You've got all the weed you'd want.
Yeah, like, when you can do it anytime you want, there's no reason to get stoned all the time.
Yeah, it's just not cool anymore.
It's not like, oh my God, I better just smoke this now or someone's going to take it away from me.
Applicant's portfolio consists of a crudely drawn neo-Nazi biker comic series. Oh.
Wait a minute, I love crudely drawn neo-Nazi biker comics.
Oh my God, you can't even say that aloud. Oh, that's bad. Number 2, applicant's portfolio includes a chrome object rendered on a checkerboard. Extra points for a lens flare.
Lens flare.
And of course, we've already mentioned that the number 1 fail is erotic furries. But I don't think that's entirely...
You already spoiled it. You have to go to, you have to build up on these things, you know? You start at 10, you work your way up to number 1.
Hey.
Haven't you ever seen The Late Show?
Hey, you know, hey, if you bring the furries on your resume, you may have lost a job, but you might have made a friend, you know?
Friend with benefits.
All right, enough of that. That's insane. All right. There's something else I thought I'd mention, because I don't really know what's going on with the HOF of Civ Fanatics, but they're the Hall of Fame and the Game of the Months and stuff, which I think we also have. We play Civ. But if you know, there's a, if you ever played at Civ Fanatics, there's a the monthly Civ games are run under a certain mod that helps them keep track of, you know, the times you save and you score in a better way. And it's all kinds of little things. The HOF mod, if you haven't heard of it. Well, apparently, they linked the bug mod with the HOF mod, and they now call it Buffy.
And there's a contest to find out what it means. Buffy.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness. So, what this is interesting is now you can play an unaltered game with the bug mod. It adds all that extra helpings, especially if you're addicted to the bug mod already, you know? And the people there who get serious about these monthly games, you know, it's a competition for them, you know? So they'll take any advantage they can get. And I think the bug mod would definitely give a player an advantage.
Yeah, it does stuff like show you when you can rush on population. Make stuff easier.
Oh, yeah. And also, the this also has the advanced combat odds added. Advanced.
The one, the mod we reviewed a little while ago that gives you all the details on combat?
I think. I can't just guarantee you that because there's no link. But
yeah, it's a,
yeah, this is...
It's the, actually mostly the same stuff. Yeah, Buck, I asked Ruff High what's the difference, and he says game checking versus HOF requirements and secret file stuff. I'm not sure what it all means, so...
Well, HOF has to be... The HOF mod is an anti-cheating mod. It's what it comes down to. You know what I'm saying?
No, but whatever.
Like, yeah, it helps them... It helps them.
So you can't reload or something, or stuff like that.
Well, you can. They just notice it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, indeed.
And they say, why'd you reload? And I think reloading is a grounds for dismissal of your game.
Of course.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, if they see you reload...
Kind of enforces Iron Man, you know, no save, no reload.
Well, no, you can save, just to, you know, if you're playing for 8 hours, and,
no,
then, and it logs you playing, and then you turn it off and save, and then you play the next day, but it, or if you play 8 hours and you reload in the middle of it, not taking any break, that's obviously cheating, you know, because you're like, oh, fuck, I gotta reload my save and redo this turn until I get it right.
Yeah, well, I mean, each time you save, it has to overwrite the previous save, so there's no way to go back.
Yeah, it does some, I don't know, it does something. But I tell you what, under the HOF mod, you can do the exploit. It's just, as soon as you submit your save, someone's going to PM you and say, hey.
Well, what SIF4 really should have had, it should have had the Iron Man option, which was from Smack, where it says, basically, every time you save, it overwrites your old save. There's no going back. Once you save, you've set it in stone. And you have to save. I mean, I think that's how it works. When you exit the game or something like that.
That's easy to defend with third-party software, though.
Oh, yeah, okay, good point.
I'm looking forward to hopping on a game of the month that looks fun. The one they have right for this episode is a little rough-sounding, but I might hop in on a more normal game for the game of the month. But anyways, I'm playing Planetfall right now, so I can't be bothered with any of this stuff.
Yeah, who? I kind of know that from somewhere.
I also wanted to look at, there is a second Firaxis Starting a Gaming Career articles, and this one's done by Firaxis programmers Marek Votko and Eric Jordan. And Ken, tell us a little bit about what you had to do to get into that club. Did they have like hazing, or they maybe like dunk your head in beer and make you drink it or something?
Did they hit you with a keyboard?
No, but it does involve some paddling with a keyboard. He's demonstrating on his friend right there, if you can see in the picture. It's like, okay, let's paddle the new programmers, those UI programmers.
Yeah, so they spank you with a keyboard? You know, they should probably use the stock keyboards because, you know, you can probably break the keyboard doing that.
Of course, the ultimate form of hazing is just doing the user interface programming. That's the
word.
Yes, Alex is like, I don't want to see any user interface codes. Get it away, get it away. Oh, must work on gameplay and AI. He likes that. Or Jason, who is the graphics rendering program. So those are the cool types of programming. UI is the new stuff. So they start off in their guide with, you know, the basic instruction. You must know C and C++, you know, which that's considered basic. That's every game nowadays uses C and C++ code, or at least something very similar to it. Like,
well, which I got a B- in at college last semester.
Good job, Tony. B-, not bad, not bad.
It was the hardest class I've ever taken.
Hey, wait until you get into data structures.
We were getting into structs, don't you worry.
Oh, okay.
No, advanced structs.
That's
something else from data structures.
But anyways, yeah, you're going to give me a headache.
Is that a phone call for you, Tony? Okay. I'll come into the rest of the show. Oh, well, they talk about Alice, a 3D programming environment that's more maybe appropriate for high school use. I've never actually heard of it myself.
No, me either.
My preference is really just to learn the basics of programming before you start to get into 3D libraries. I'm only doing OpenGL right now myself. So it's a little bit different between whether you want to learn programming as a basic concept first and then apply it to games, or whether you really want to learn game programming through and through right from the get-go. So they also recommend C# and XNA. And I believe these are used in iPod game programming, if I recall correctly. And that's actually a pretty big market.
For Xbox programming, I believe.
Oh, Xbox. Okay, that's it. iPod has its own particular SDK of some sort, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some kind of Mac language.
Okay.
Oh, okay. The Flash, they say Flash ActionScript.
Yes, Flash ActionScript is becoming the new dominant type of user interface programming, from what I understand.
That's for a bunch of crappy online games. They want me to... You ever go on Facebook and play the retarded games that are played by such a huge number of people?
Yeah, apparently now Brian Reynolds is going to be making those. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, everyone's making those goddamn things. They're making Doom for the iPod or the iPhone now.
Really, I'm surprised that hasn't been done. But that's different than a Facebook game.
I know. Facebook games are even lamer.
Yeah, okay. But Flash and ActionScript, yeah, they can be used to make browser games, but they can also be the user interface for full-blown PC games. It's getting more common to do that, from what I understand.
Can they render, do they do 3D graphics with ActionScript?
I don't think so, but it, like I said, it's just for the interface, so all of the things, you know how interfaces do a lot more moving and popping and bubbling and oozing around and things like that?
Yeah.
That's done with ActionScript.
All right, see, I feel you there.
Yeah. And then, of course, at the end, they say, get a programming degree, which, yes.
Yeah, go to school.
But at the same time, the really impressive thing that makes a difference between someone who just has a programming degree is if you have a programming degree and you have modded or made your own game in some way. That's huge. That's almost as big a difference as the guy who has no programming degree versus the guy who does have one. If you've got a good degree and you've got the modding experience, you know, something under your belt that's real and tangible and done.
Yeah, I'd say whatever branch of the gaming industry you want to break into. I mean, if you have any experience with modding or independent game development, that's a big, big plus. I mean, if you want to become a writer, start writing. If you want to become a game developer, start making games. It's as simple as that.
I would actually love to get into testing.
I think the designer of Colonization did that too.
Testing is somewhat of an avenue into designing.
That's one way to do things, I guess, yeah.
Oh, I said game testing is sort of is kind of the main pathway into game design, unless you come from school with a degree in design, which they're actually starting to do.
Well, I might get that too, but I want to start in testing.
Okay, yeah. Start at the bottom of the ladder. Firaxis should do a third segment about how to become a game designer.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. But anyways, if you guys are modders, that probably means... Unfortunately, you don't have a job at a game company. I hate to say that about you, listeners, but read these articles. maybe you can make your dreams come true and be a rock star. I mean, video game designer.
Or a video game designer at Rockstar.
Artist Sketchpad, where we discuss graphics and artwork from the Civ modding community. I have just a little snippet for the Sketchpad. Now, I'm going to let you know a rumor. I have been in touch with this guy named Keldath, who was finally the person to grab the Dune mod by its reins and do something with it. He's actually took up the charge. I never wanted to do it. It was too much work for me. I just wanted to submit art to it, you know? But he has grabbed it, and I will show you the truth that the Dune mod is returning because someone has made the worm.
The sleeper has awoken.
Yes. Shai Halud. Are you seeing this picture?
If you post a link, I might.
What picture? Yeah.
Link, you need to look in the forum and refresh your page.
Okay, hold on.
Oh, right.
Is that awesome? Or what?
Okay.
Oh, that is pretty slick.
Yeah. Shai Halud has returned.
Yeah, the beak doesn't look like it fully closes, though. It's got some gaps on the side there, but...
Well, you know, I don't think it closed in the movie. That's like right out of the
movie.
It
closes without any seams. The seams close up very nicely. I remember that.
We're not seeing the whole thing. I don't know what the deal is, but... You know, we got the Kwisatz Haderach being chased by the Bene Gesserit. What can you do?
Now, it seems to be like it's attacking a... A mech.
It's a BattleTech mech.
It's a
Warhammer.
yeah.
So we know who wins in BattleTech versus Dune.
That's for sure. They put a lot of internal detail in that. You can see all the internal spikes inside the.
That's just a texture, I guess. So.
That's the flat texture.
No, look at it.
That's got a
clearly.
Who drew that? If that's a flat texture, that's amazing.
No, that's not a flat texture. That's models. That couldn't
be
anything else.
It could be.
No, look at that. You can even see on the side of the, on the near side of the worm's mouth, you can see the thing sticking inward. If it was a flat texture, you wouldn't be able to see that.
The Fremen go and get them teeth and break them out and turn them into Chris knives, which is the Fremen's shank they always have.
Yeah, you're just doing it out there.
I'm out there, man. But hey, I've talked to Keldath over the interwebs, and we talked about coming on the show in an episode or two. You know what? Maybe next episode. I don't know. We'll see.
You can give it a try.
Yeah, but, you know, all hail the Dune mod. It's going to be great. I hope you use some of my old outdated artwork.
Just to clarify, he's putting all the mod together. Is he making any artwork of his own or doing any code for it? Is it more of a...
No, that unit is by Deliverator. He also made some colonization stuff, and he based it on a model found on Google 3D stuff or something. And that had a couple thousand polygons, and he reduced it to something... it's still high, but... something more usable.
Is that where this worm came from?
Yeah, originally, but he modified it. He created the texture himself. So of course, it's still a big achievement.
Oh well, you know, you have to animate these by hand with Civ.
Yes, he did some sandstorm effect. So when the worm rises, it causes I've been following.
It's amazing. Oh, so you've been following this mod a bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, if he can capture that mystical future of the Dune universe, you know, with anachronism next to unbelievable technology and worms eating everyone.
Yeah.
So, Keldath, I challenge you to come onto the modcast. You heard it. You heard it. I challenged him.
I think he's probably listening.
Yeah, he probably is. He's listening right now. He's probably got a microphone in my room somewhere. Oh, wait! It's on my face. Okay.
Code Corner, where we discuss SDK and Python mods or any other non-graphical mods in the Civilization 4 modding community. Okay, the Era mod styles by Dulish is basically a mod that's going to change when the different civilizations start in a game. As you know, whenever you start a game, you can choose a starting era for the game, from ancient, which is the default, which almost 99% of people play with, to starting sometime later in history. And this will basically say that a certain civilization can only start from era A to era B. So, for example, America only starts from the Renaissance to the modern era. So only if your game is there will you get the Americans as a starting random civilization in the game.
But, you know, as you just said, most people do play at the ancient level. So when you see American ancient levels, obviously it makes no sense. You know?
Yes. People have always complained about having the Americans present at 4000 B.C. That's always been rather silly.
Even Americans?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. These are the...
Because we are the culmination of history itself.
Well, look,
really,
Stupid Civ 3. Remember Stupid Civ 3 made the Americans like Native Americans before the ancient. You know what I'm talking about? It had Lincoln with a little fur hat on.
Yeah, it did that for everyone, though. Everyone had a little fur hat on in the ancient period. And everyone was, like, tricked out with glasses and wearing a three-piece suit. And by the modern era,
that part of suit.
Montezuma in his three-piece suit, you know?
That was awesome, though.
Yeah, but it was all very silly because, you know, you confuse the dress and customs of one particular culture with modernity itself. That those have nothing to do with each other.
Well, you know,
everyone was wearing bearskins before they invented more advanced clothing. But there's nothing about suits that's necessarily more past, like, the Renaissance period.
So, instead of giving your leaderhead suits, what does this do graphically, or is this...
It doesn't do anything graphically, it just changes this starting time period for you. And a lot of the civs, he's put in the new data for it because it's a new value in each civilization's description, XML. And it's got like the minimum starting era and the maximum starting era. So I wish he had used actual references to the era names rather than just numbers. So it's like, this starts from era 0 to 8, you know? And it's like, what does that mean? You know? It's like, okay.
Well, so it's just an XML of one integer?
Yeah.
No.
Useful term that would ever read me to how to explain where that is and how to do it.
The problem is everyone pretty much always starts in 4000 BC, so I guess, it doesn't really change too much. It makes some system playable, I guess. It would be more interesting if Civs actually started later, if you had...
Well, that's going with Rise and
that's
Fall.
That's Rise and Fall, yeah.
And Rise and Fall, remember, if you want to be American.
With a massive mod, yeah.
But if you could do that on a random map, for example.
Yeah, well, you know, let's ask Rai, you know, who knows? He could release that little bit of code.
Well, this is kind of like a compromise between regular civs, start everyone at the same time, Americans in 4000 BC, and Rise really going to an extreme of creating a very different, you know, mid-game starting effect, which requires pre-computation of the map.
Yeah, exactly. That's very specific and very Earth-specific as well. I could imagine that, like this, if there's empty space on a map somewhere, and it's, 1500 AD, you create a new civ, and you give them maybe some extra settlers or something like that to get them started.
Well, if you're on multiple continents, you're going to have some empty space, but if you're on a Pangea...
Yeah, okay, then it's not going to happen, but...
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But you know what this is going to do? It's going to encourage people to maybe play at a later date. I would like to see a variant where if you start at each era, like you do ancient era starting, you'll have an ancient game all the way into the modern era, you know? But if you start a Renaissance, it's only the Renaissance ones and the ones that were still around from the last era. So, like, obviously Sumeria's gone by, what, the end of the classical, right?
Yeah, I think he has Sumeria down as, like, only from era 0 to 1. So it's like, it will only
so
be there if
that.
You start at 4000 BC. And anything past that, it's, like, not there.
So if you start a Renaissance game, you don't have no chance to have it. So it works in the other direction, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, it restricts
its minimum area and maximum area.
This is really going to help people who like to do advanced start. Have you played Advanced Start very much, Ken?
I never play Advanced Start.
Oh, I've done it.
I don't think anyone has.
I actually use it a lot. It's fun.
Oh, okay.
Especially if you're Renaissance. If you start Renaissance, you build yourself a little basic civ with the points. So you're automatically not only caught up with technology, you're not just a pile of units that are somehow Renaissance, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what this is also going to do? It's going to slightly bump up the difficulty of those later starts, because you're not going to have a whole bunch of civs being placed in those late accelerated starts whose Nunez units are, like, totally gone. Like, it's Molly. It's like, oh. It's like, in the Renaissance period, I never had my Nunez unit. Molly usually builds itself up, has an early game advantage, kind of gets a little bit beefier territory, and then tries to ride that advantage for the rest of the game.
Yeah,
and the
true.
Computer's not going to do that for you in a late start. You're just going to be screwed out of all your advantage of your Nunez unit, your Nunez building, you know, those early play strategies that are really very, very important for any civilization that's got
some
an ancient era Nunez unit.
Some civs have an ancient era Nunez unit that's not in the era that you would see them in this mod, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas here it's like, wow, I started, say, America in the Renaissance, and I've got Germany next to me, and England, and France, all of who have Nunez units of, like, musketeers and tanks, so I'm going to have to deal with these people's Nunez units later in the game.
Well, you know, Nunez units are basically as strong as a couple times promoted unit, you know?
Yeah, but it's free for, you know, it's
powerful.
Pretty powerful, I think, because you can rely on it as saying, oh, I'm going to be, as long as I'm not totally behind in tech, the most powerful militarily for a while here. And I got to take advantage of that. You know?
Greece can be in all of the eras. China can be in all the eras.
Oh, you mean just because it's... okay, because the civilization has continued to exist for that period.
Egypt will be in all the eras.
I don't think so.
Honestly, I would not consider the current Egyptian civilization to be Egypt, because Egypt was... the classical Egypt was conquered and really gone as a civilization by the time of the Greeks.
And there's also Greece and Byzantium, so...
Well, it was the Sultanate of Egypt.
Well, yeah, but I would say Egypt now is just really part of the Arab civilization. It's really...
You could say the same thing for Greece and for any civ. I mean,
things have
changed so much over time, so in that sense.
You know, I mean, should Rome continue to exist as a civilization just because Italy's still around? I mean...
Well, yeah, there is no Italy in civ.
Well,
is there?
Yeah, but you see my point. You know, like,
yeah. You know what I just realized this would be great for? One of those mods that's just a million civs added. What was that mod? The Civ Gold?
Oh, right. Yeah.
This would be sick for Civ Gold because Civ Gold will... add more variety to your each era, you know what I mean?
It could also keep the things from getting a little too overblown, because you'll kind of contract that ridiculous pool of possible civilizations that can spawn.
Exactly. So Civ Gold people, check this out. This is kind of a good idea for adding to the mod, maybe.
Yeah, and I think there was one other thing that we did here in this. He added a couple of other little miscellaneous things in here with his mod. And he kind of loses some points, Thulish, I mean, for including every single source file
unit parts
in the DLL and all of the object files in a 19-megabyte download that he put up on some kind of external server that you have to wait 5 minutes to download. I hate those.
Yeah, Thulish, boil that code down for us. Get that nice and clean and tidy. This is a great idea.
If you use a diff, which can be made by... WinMerge.
What did you just say?
A diff.
A
diff file. It's a file that only records the difference between two other files. You can literally have this thing be like 100 kilobytes.
Well, you could just have this as a little DLL, you know?
Oh, yeah, he does provide a DLL, I believe.
All right, well, this is an awesome, awesome concept, you know? And, you know, as I said, advanced start players, this would be fun to make your game even a little more realistic.
Okay, and... other mod, hold on a bit. The multiple production mod, which Maniac found for us. It's a BTS 3.19 mod. It basically changes around the way that your production overflows. When you have a high production city that's, say, building something that only costs, like, say, 30, but you've got a production of, like, 100, it can go build the whole one whole unit, finish it, and go right into the next thing and potentially finish more than one building or unit in one turn.
Oh, so it's talking about if you have that overrun on a rush, that it'll build an extra unit, but it'll waste the rest?
Yeah, well, this...
on the Colts?
Yeah, this goes right on to the next thing in your production queue, so it doesn't necessarily make two of the same thing. Say I have a spearman and then an axeman, and it'll make as many as it can.
Well, let's say you rush a longbowman, you know, two turns from it's done, it's going to have an overrun into the next unit, but it'll build one more unit, but it won't build a third or work on a third. Is that what this is changing?
It will. If you have enough production, it will build two longbowmen. This is especially useful in the late game, I think, when you have this one city with a military academy and a the Aerobic Epic. Then
oh, the unit spitter.
Yeah, so imagine, say, your unit had 10 hammers left on it. You did a rush, so your production this turn is like 40 hammers, and the unit after the unit you're building is only 20. So there's enough there to finish the unit you're currently working on, and all the overflow would be enough to go into and complete an entire second unit, that unit finished, and then any additional overflow goes into the third unit, and it's partial for the next turn.
And now listen, this pops off two units at once in the square is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Holy balls! This is awesome. You ever have to see this building a modern armor every turn?
Yeah, this is
it's actually only a change of 4 files. So it's strange that it took someone so long to make this.
Yes, Devin knows how to pack his files correctly.
Now this is some code then, right? Some SDK.
Yeah, it's just a little change to city production. Goes in there and fiddles with the way things roll over for the city and how its production works. So he's also done some potential fixes here to work for exploits. So this does not work, it's not applied to wonders and projects, so you can't cheat your way to getting those done. Eliminate building food production units and settlers. Not blocking city growth. The rule does not apply to food-produced units. You know, so how certain units, you're contributing your food, the food doesn't roll over into the next unit. So, say you're working on that settler, and the settler uses food, but the rollover that would go to, like, say, an axeman, you don't get to apply your food to the axeman.
Oh, yeah, I see this.
You know, because there's very tricky things. Like, I imagine a lot of the work he did was to make sure this couldn't be exploited in certain ways. There's always things you have to consider like that.
I've always liked certain mods that add a civic that allow you to produce military units with food. I've always kind of liked those.
Oh, that's a cool option. I've seen and played some mods like that.
Yeah, and that's interesting because the food's going to boost you, but you're not going to grow. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But
if I recall, that
wasn't
like
in the game originally, but it was cut. I think it was unbalanced. I don't remember why.
Yeah, yeah. Firaxis cut that. That's why the code is still in there. And
exactly.
You can enable it.
Okay, okay.
I find that strange. Usually I think 1 foot is worth more than one hammer, so I would, I think, never use it, let's just say, for Civic.
Well, if you just want to get nuts.
Yeah.
If you have a couple of food resources in a city, you could easily have 30, 40 food from just 3 population. You can
that's what slavery is for.
Well, it's good if you run up against your health cap and you're starting to, the food would otherwise be wasted, or you'd overpopulate and become angry and all these other things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of situations where mostly now people just make settlers when they're in that situation. It's like, oh, I've reached my cap.
No, you rush if that happens.
Hey, if you've had the point where you have nothing to build and no wealth or research, and you just are making a unit and then just immediately deleting them, like, settlers are no good at that point, you know?
If that happens, you're going to have to do
total
that.
Fools would do that, Tony, or the AI.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, what if you're at your city limit economically for a long period of time? You don't have currency yet or anything, you know?
Oh, well, then you're
playing a batty design game. That's my opinion.
Well, see, I like to...
You can
I do this
keep
trick,
the settlers
right?
around so that when you finally do want to expand, you can
I go to the Renaissance while everyone's still in the ancient. Or I go to the medieval when everyone's in the ancient. That's what my trick is, but it sets me behind in some economic advantages. How do I do that? How do I get to the Renaissance while everyone else is the ancient? Theology with the Oracle. Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast,
Revcast,
or Polycast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. You know, I've had a big month or two. It caused me to be late on episode 35, and I just had my daughter.
Yep. Tony is spawning.
And I am multiplying. Soon my clone army will be unstoppable.
So now we have to tell her name?
Oh, yeah, her name is Madeline Leia Keel. And she was born on the 4th of July.
A true nationalist.
Well, I hope not, but she can love her country, you know. Just don't love the government. But anyways, that's not the odd part. Because, you know, that actually makes sense, because my son was born on Valentine's Day, for those who don't know, and I was born on New Year's.
Wow.
Okay.
Is that kind of weird? Yeah. What's the odds of us all being born on holidays?
What?
Never tell me the odds.
I think it's like 1 in 36,000.
46,937,000 to 1.
Against. All right, yeah, but I just want to let everyone know, if some of these episodes are a little late, I apologize. I've not been getting as much sleep as I would like.
I imagine.
But I tell you what, I once you have your daughter, you have your baby daughter, oh my gosh, your heart will just pop. I swear, she's so adorable. She's my little girl. I love her so much. So, woo, Tanya, my wife, creating children. Trust me, you always got to cheer the woman up, because it's a lot of work for ladies when they have kids and stuff. They have to go through a lot of crap. So, and I wish upon you, Otter, to have kids. And you can. You should have kids, too.
Oh, God, please don't.
Next time you put your into a vagina, you will procreate.
I'll make sure there's a condom on it. I never want to be there.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not too worried either, because the last time you got let was, what, 1998?
That's none of your business.
Okay, you are editing all of this out.
No. But, yeah, we had probably, I'd say, way too much fun. I think we've actually crossed that boundary. I just want to let everyone know that Maniac, a.k.a. Peter, will be hanging out with us as long as we can trick him into showing up for the report dates.
I'll try to say as much as about this any tips. So,
yeah, we already said that. Don't remind him again. He might wise up.
So, did you have fun?
Of course, all the time.
Oh, great, great. I'm glad. We had a fun episode. Today, we have been joined with Kenneth, Impaler WRG Ferlin.
Farewell.
Peter, Maniac, Steenbeka.
Good night, everyone.
Wouter, Locutus, Snyders.
Bye-bye.
And me, Tony Garrett's his Nisnet, Keel. Goodbye. Record date, July 26, 2009. Civilization 4, Warlords Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright, Take 2 Interactive. Copyright 2009, Civilized Communications at civcom.net. Oh, game programmer. My bad.
Yeah, dory.
Alright, well, Ken has pointed out that I'm a moron.
Hey, Sato.
They're trying. Hey, it's the first time, eh?
Are you gonna curse every time you fuck up? Because it's gonna be really funny for me, and Tony and Ken are not gonna understand one thing.